It's a real pleasure to have with me Nathaniel Leach, co-founder and portfolio manager of LBW Wealth Management, based in Madison, Wisconsin. Nathaniel has presented at our conferences in the past, and I also had the pleasure of meeting Nathaniel in person at the Zurich Project a couple of years ago. And I really just was hoping to get your perspective on what's going on in the markets right now. It's an unusual period, and I'm grateful for you taking the time to share with us how you're assessing the situation, what you've been up to, and where you see opportunities.
Well, thanks for having me on, John. It's always good to be back. There's much smarter people out there, especially in your network, who can probably explain the macro situation far better than I can. But I'll take a stab at it. As I've mentioned in the past, we're big fans of John Malone. So John Malone and Greg Maffei, to give credit where it's properly due. So as such, we are heavily invested in the Liberty concept that's commonly known, or what we like to call liberty entities. So as some people are aware, they are generally invested in live events, or in some cases, travel-related industries. So you can imagine that as a result of the COVID-19 outbreak, it has been interesting, to say the least, when it comes to the Liberty complex, because some companies have gotten battered, such as Liberty Sirius, Formula One, of which both I have presented on MOI Global, of which I'd be happy to discuss. And then some have held up relatively well, such as Liberty Broadband and GCI Liberty, both plays on Charter. So when it comes to what we're seeing in the macro landscape, we are aware of how it could impact the afflicted holdings, and we believe that it could go many different ways regarding the macro landscape. There could be a V-shaped recovery. The likelihood of that is probably not going to happen. So it is more likely that this is probably going to stretch out and most likely lead to a recession here in the US, which is not great, but it's not going to kill the companies that we're invested in. And I'd be happy to expound upon that further.
Yeah, I think that would be valuable and helpful, given your intimate knowledge of the Liberty entities, to kind of let us know, perhaps starting with the ones you discussed at our events, how you feel about their ability to weather this storm and come out on the other side unscathed, as it were.
Okay. I can, so yeah, so starting from what I would deem to be perceived as the weakest is Formula One. So there is some risk with Formula One in that the number of fans that attend these events can correspond to how much the broadcasters pay, the respective broadcasters pay Formula One to broadcast their races on their networks, the respective networks. So there is some risk in that. If you don't have any fans and if you're not having any races, that's a problem. However, example of take the broadcasters. If you look into the risk factors of Formula One's 10K, technically Liberty Media's 10K, you will find that the broadcasters are still required to pay Formula One so long as there are 15 races within the racing calendar. So if in the event they dip in, even when they dip below the 15 races in the racing calendar, Formula One is still going to get paid. It's just going to be reduced fees. Then the broadcasters are able to do the reduced fees, of which they do not, in the risk factors, they do not tell you how much that's going to be. And I have not yet seen any updated information released from Formula One as to what that may be either. So that's just one example where the market has heavily punished Formula One, but the broadcaster fees might be there. They dip below the 15 races if 15 races haven't occurred, then they only get paid reduced fees from the broadcasters. There is some risk with regards to the event fees that they take in from the event hosts. They're not going to get paid those fees, obviously, which has been quite lucrative to Formula One. So that could be a part that could hurt. And then there's also the hospitality group, but that isn't as material because the expenses for that piece, it's pretty much a wash. So all in all, we think that Formula One at these prices is definitely an overreaction on the market's part. And for those clients, and just as a reminder, we're not maze technically, but we don't blow in and out of positions when a new client comes in. Just to clarify, we go in based on the valuation of the positions when the new client comes in. So every client's portfolio is different in terms of weighting. So for those clients that we have had sufficient cash to deploy, we have been investing more, especially at these prices, into Formula One. With regards to Liberty Sirius, which I would mark as the next weakest, if you will, perceived by the market. Liberty Sirius, which is based upon Sirius XM, they own over 3 billion shares of Sirius XM. Liberty Sirius is trading at I think it's at approximately a 30% discount currently, 25 to 30% discount, might be more. And it's selling at like 10 to 11 times if you look through the free cash flow that is warranted to Liberty Sirius versus their shares that they own of Sirius XM. I think that the market is definitely overreacting because it still makes me laugh. Because the market's perceived that because people aren't commuting to work currently, that they're no longer that SiriusXM's business is going to suffer. But I think what most investors aren't paying attention to, who have blown out of SiriusXM, are they're not factoring in that SiriusXM's they typically charge fees 6 months to a year in advance. So they are locked in. The money's already out the door. You could potentially go to SiriusXM and say, I want my money back, but the money's already out the door. Psychologically, people aren't going to put as much emphasis on it. Now, if they're paying monthly, it's a different story. That's something that's in some cases, they start you off at $12.95 or $16.95, depending on the type of package that you get. And you would be more apt possibly to stop those payments. And then that, of course, the payments go up as the trial period or the special discount period ends. So that could be significant to some people, but the majority of their fees are earned on a 6 month to a year out they've already paid out lump sums. So the investors have forgotten that for some reason. So let's say that this isolation, nobody goes to work for the next 2 months, 3 months. The odds of that severely impacting SiriusXM's revenues is small. Now, where there is some risk, and which Wall Street puts a heavy emphasis upon, which is the other piece of the story, is how many cars are sold and how many new ads do SiriusXM add to their subscribers? So there is some risk that perhaps their revenues won't grow as much, and the free cash flow could be impacted to some degree. So you could forecast that out, but when you consider that all value investors' timeframes are typically 5 years, 10 years plus out, when you do a discounted cash flow analysis, build in the margin of safety, if enough time, as we all know, the math dictates that the cash flows that you receive up front, again, provided that your time frame is 10 plus, 20, 30 plus years out, then the impact to your intrinsic value calculation is relatively small. So looking at all of our positions, that's how I'm constantly looking at it, that yes, this year, maybe 2021, could be impactful to some of our companies. But I think that with our long time frame, that we're investing for the long haul, and it's not going to be as impactful on our company's intrinsic values. That's a subjective bias. And then for the last company that I think is actually the strongest, which has also been beaten down, surprisingly so, is Liberty Ventures, which has since become known as GCI Liberty, was spun out of the Interactive, the corporate parent, a couple years ago. And that's basically a play on Charter. They have they own Charter stock directly, and they also own shares of Liberty Broadband, which principal investment is Charter. So all in all, they own a little over 6% of Charter Communications. And they also own a relatively large holding, I think of 600 to 700 million at current market prices, of LendingTree, which has also been subsequently hit in this market downturn. And I believe that it's currently trading at a 10 to 15% discount to its underlying holdings. And I think that it has been beaten down unnecessarily, because Charter's not going anywhere. I mean, you can see it in the thing that the peak hours, typically they were at night when people came home from work on the personal residential internet. But now you're basically seeing the same peak level of internet usage throughout the day at residential addresses. It's because people are staying home, obviously. So what on earth would make Charter less of an investment if the internet usage has gone through the roof, in my mind? Now, there is a risk of that people might, in order to save costs, this is a monthly subscription type business, they're not going to get rid of their internet, but they may get rid of their video packages. But even if they do, they're most likely going to be switching to some sort of streaming offering, of which Charter Spectrum offers to their customers. So I'm not as I am with the rest of our holdings. I think that Liberty Broadband, which is another holding of ours, and also GCI Liberty are some of our strongest companies going into this downturn. And that's why they are, combined, our most heavily weighted position amongst the individual positions that we invest in.
Thank you very much for that. Maybe just a couple of questions to try to understand a few things a little bit better. With regard to Formula One, are they doing any races right now? Meaning, will they do races without people present, so just to be televised, or will they pause until they can have folks live at the races?
So, yes and no. So they were originally going to run Bahrain's race. They're originally going to run it without any audience and no crowds, no people in the stands. But now I believe that has since been, I don't know if it's canceled or postponed. And what I've heard that they're looking into doing is that they're actually, I don't know if it's going to happen, but they're contemplating actually putting the drivers into racing in a video game esports style is what I've heard, but I'd have to look at more into that. But essentially, the drivers will have the same settings on their racing setups, and they will race in an esports format. So I don't know, and my belief is that the fans can then watch that, which I'm very interested to see how it plays out. So, and there have been a number of cancellations, like Shanghai was the first to go, as the COVID-19 outbreak was the first to, China was the first to experience that. And I think that Vietnam has also been canceled as well. And Australia, of course.
So, what's your current base case in terms of them doing 15 races and kind of meeting that minimum of their contracts?
I think that to be on the safe, I think that they could, as of today, I think it's possible for them to do the 15 races. But in the worst case, let's assume that they don't. The problem is they have not yet released the information on how much their fees are going to be reduced. So if they have not yet released that information, I believe that many things like them being able to achieve 15 races as of today is possible. But as we've seen, so much has changed in the last month that it's a very fluid situation, as I think most management is saying. So as of right now, because they have not yet released that information to my knowledge, then I would assume that they think they can reach the 15 race minimum. If they don't believe that to occur, Liberty's pretty good. Liberty companies are pretty good about being upfront with shareholders about possible bad news. So they're pretty good about releasing that. So when, if they feel that way, then I wouldn't be surprised if they release such information.
The Malone entities are known to run with some leverage. How do you feel about their ability to kind of handle that leverage if there's, a pause in the businesses?
It's a great question. Leverage is always a risk. Liberty has shown, as you say, the ability to utilize leverage very well. And going into downturns such as these, leverage can be a risk. However, with the majority, with actually Formula One being an outlier, I would say, in some small, and I can go into more detail on that, but the majority of Liberty debt has just been, I think that there should be classes taught about how Liberty companies have structured their debt. So, for example, one company that we like is Discovery, especially at current prices. And they have structured debt incredibly well, in that they have staggered out the term payments far out into the future. And you can also see that with Charter. You can see that with SiriusXM and Formula One to a degree. So the problem with Formula One, at the outset, when they first bought it in 2016, was that it had over $5 billion in debt. Actually, it was more like six or seven, I think, when they bought it. And that was all recourse to Formula One, the actual operating entity. Since then, they have restructured all of their debt. They have shifted about half of, they paid down about $1 billion or two of debt, and they have shifted the remainder, half of it, to the corporate parent, the Formula One track corporate. Based upon stock that the Liberty Media parent owned, and so it's recourse to that, or used as collateral to that those stock positions. Excuse me, And then the remainder has been left over at Formula One, the Formula One operating entity. But the problem with that debt is that it's in a revolver, of which the term for the revolver was renegotiated to push out the term when the whole kit and caboodle comes due. But that's about three plus years out. So I think that the free cash flow, while it could be hurt this year, it will still be growing. They'll still be earning cash flow. And I think that perhaps they'll put more of a focus on paying down that debt. At the Liberty Investor Day in November, they expounded upon how they could, in the next, God, I can't remember, was it 3 or 4 years or 5 years, they expected to be able to produce $3 billion, not in free cash flow completely, but $3 billion in cash from Formula One alone, that they were talking about how they could reapply elsewhere. I don't think that that's realistic anymore, the $3 billion, but I still think that perhaps the focus will be reshifted to paying down that debt credit line, that revolver within Formula One and operating group, the operating entity itself.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Shifting gears a little bit, I'm curious if you could talk about generally your portfolio management in a period of volatility, such as the one we're going through. How active are you in terms of rebalancing, in terms of moving capital around between various investments?
That's another good question. So this is my first downturn of such severity as a professional investor. So I guess you could call me a downturn virgin on the professional side, but I've been investing since late 2000. So I was there for the crisis. I learned a lot vicariously through other investors from the financial crisis. Whether I'm going to put it to good use or not is a different question. We'll have to see when we get out of this thing. But I learned investors such as Wally White's that the mistake they made was that they shot their bazooka, so to speak. They shot their elephant gun, as Buffett likes to say, too quickly. They expelled their cash too fast, and as a result, they rode it the downturn down. But they had subsequently shot most of their load at the beginning of and midway down to the downturn. So as a result, they were unable to buy in it at better prices as they would have liked to. But as we know, all value investors, we tend to buy at the beginning or mid of the downturn, and then we have to subsequently continue to ride it down before we then eventually see the upswing occur. So in short term, it's painful because investors have questions about why this has occurred, but that's the name of the game. That's how you take advantage of such downturns. But nevertheless, he felt that he spent too much too fast. So I think I've learned from that. We have been slowly buying down. In retrospect, I think I've already made a slight mistakes in terms of that I may have expelled too much too fast. I shouldn't say too much is probably more adequate. But we still do have reserves for those clients, for certain clients with cash. And we have enough to definitely take advantage if there is more of a downturn. But I feel really good about the fact that I think I've been fairly disciplined. And when the prices have come down to significant discounts of the intrinsic value, that we have steadily been taking advantage as such.
How challenging has the business side of things been for you in terms of communicating with clients and making sure that they don't get cold feet right now?
It has been challenging. I'm very fortunate in that I have two business partners who are the ones who are more client-facing than I. I've actually, since the downturn, very rarely had to have spoken to clients who are having cold feet issues. my partners are successfully being able to speak to those types of clients. We've also been very fortunate in that, as of now, and this may change as time goes on and if it gets worse, as of right now, a significant majority of our clients have been extremely, we've picked good clients. I'll put it that way. We have picked clients that are actually calling us and saying, should we be giving you more money to invest? Which is fantastic. We, as a part of our practice, we also help our clients with their financial planning. So they are better able to determine how much they can afford to actually invest. And in times like these, not be affected by downturns like this, because we've done the proper planning with them. So with regards to that financial planning, when they call us and they say, should we be giving you more money? We can then go back to their financial plan and say, you can't, you can't, based on what we've spoken about before, what your current circumstances are. Do you have that emergency fund in place that we spoke about? We have found that it has been invaluable to provide financial planning to our clients, because by doing that, and on an ongoing basis, a financial plan is not static. It is dynamic. Life changes like that. For example, six of our clients so far have told us that they have been let go from their job. So that's what that emergency fund is for. And if people have that fund, that emergency fund on hand, it gives them a sense of comfort that we have found pervades into their line of thinking when it comes to how their portfolio is doing, because we're more volatile than most because of the way that we invest. And if they can handle the because of an emergency fund in place, then I think that our calls would be probably more on the negative side right now, with people calling us frantically telling us that they wanted to sell or get out because of panic. And I think that a lot of that has been mitigated as a result of our financial planning acumen.
Great. Well, Nathaniel, maybe lastly, I'll just ask about any other opportunities you would like to talk about, or anything that's kind of hitting your watch list or screens at this time, other than the Liberty entities, where you feel like it's an area to perhaps look into.
Certainly. Looking at my list of my watch list here, that's what we're currently invested in. I would say that some companies that hold promise, but for various reasons I've held off on in investing in the past. One such company I think is Exor, which is run by the John Agnelli, I want to say, of the Fiat family. So they own a controlling position in Fiat, Ferrari, CNH Industrial, which they're in the process of, I believe, spinning out a piece of that piece of CNH Industrial. They're in the process of merging Fiat with PSA, and they're also in the process of selling Partners RE, their reinsurance company. And when all that is said and done, they could potentially have net cash 30 euros per share, and they're trading at 36 euros right now per share. In my mind, that's getting near the territory of I think it's possibly a good deal at this point, at this price. My problem with it is that I have never been particularly comfortable with Fiat, the big car manufacturers. Ferrari, I can understand. That's more of a brand, a luxury, upscale, scarcity. You can see all the attributes in that. That's a fantastic business model, from what I understand. They're getting out of reinsurance. I don't see anything wrong with reinsurance, but I could understand the risk. And if they found a buyer at a very decent gain, I think it's a 10% IRR they've owned that. It's fairly decent for that amount of money. When you put all that together, I think that there's still some. It's Fiat is the biggest problem for me. Fiat is it's just such a big beast. You have union relations. It's very capital intensive. But I know from just watching it all these years, via investors like Monish Pabrai, for example. I understand the thesis. It's just personally, I'm not particularly comfortable with them. Other companies that I've been keeping an eye on, Altria. The big thing for me with Altria, I have no issue with investing in tobacco companies. The problem I have with Altria is that they clearly bought in a valuation of Juul, their ownership of Juul, which they have since written down by two-thirds. I think in terms of capital allocation, that was a big miss on their part. So my concern is about future capital allocation. Are they going to continue ramping up that dividend at the expense of raising more debt? It's a very solid economic business model, but my concerns is the capital allocation overall. They can support the dividends, but excuse me, at what cost? Other companies that just passing interest, but also a debt issue, is another Malone-related entity, Liberty Latin America. I know that there are some investors out there who have expounded upon it. I have nothing. I think that it's a fantastic business model as well. It's very similar to charter state. My problem is it's the debt load spread out amongst the entities. Again, while like most Liberty entities, it is well staggered in terms of payments, it does have a significant credit facility that is pretty well drawn in at least over $1 billion total amongst all the entities, which does give me some concern based on their actual free cash flow that is being produced from the company, even though that free cash flow is growing. And there's also geopolitical and weather-related concerns I have. The hurricane that spread through there last year, 2 years ago, I think, severely impacted them. Obviously, insurance payments helped cover some of that, or if not most of that, but then they had to rebuild. So my concern is weather-related issues, because these are mostly countries within the Caribbean. And then also potential risk as well. So for me personally, as the investor for our clients' funds, I don't feel comfortable. But I know that there are investors out there who are far smarter than I, who have developed a comfort level with those particular companies and are investing as such. And the way that our business model is set up is that we're kind of a hybrid, in that I invest in individual positions, and then we also invest with a number of mutual fund investors. And I know that some of our mutual fund managers are investing in those companies that I just named or have in the past. So that's why we do our model like that, is because I know that I don't know everything. That's very important for an investor to know. So that's why we partnered with other investors who have within their circles of confidence, they understand those particular companies don't understand. And as a result, we feel that our clients will benefit in the long run.
Great. Well, that's very helpful. Thank you. And I'll just mention that we did speak with Guy Speer last Friday, and in that call, he commented on XOR as
Oh.
well. So that might be interesting to listen to.
Thank you.
Nathaniel, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to be with us and to share your perspective, which has been very helpful, and we appreciate you being willing to do that.
Well, thanks for having me on again, John. I really appreciate it. And I'm sure I'll talk to you later.
Want to wish you and your family all the very best in this time.
Likewise, stay safe and stay healthy.
Thank you. Goodbye for now.